Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Dacia Eaton of KSKA, and Sean Dugan of the Alaska Dispatch. Paul, Governor Sean Parnell signs Senate Bill 21, the oil tax revision, which was the centerpiece of his legislative agenda this year. The bill is law, but the controversy is far from over. Tell us more.
Well, years in the making, this new law, essentially reforms, cuts back, I guess reduces the taxes that were already there in Alaska's clear and equitable share oil tax. It's about all it does. There is a thought out there among opponents of this that it's a tax reduction, which is aimed, by the way.
I believe they use the word giveaway.
Well, I'm going to get to that. This is aimed at increasing production investment on the North Slope. Opponents do see it as a giveaway, and they're putting together a petition campaign to get a referendum on the ballot to roll it back, to repeal SB 21. Whether they'll be successful or not, I don't know. They've got to get more than 30,000 signatures by mid-July.
One of the things that's striking to me is the number of opinion pieces the governor just had on this subject. It seems like they're starting pretty early in the battle for public opinion, but maybe that's what that referendum campaign is all about.
It's going to be a huge campaign on both sides, I think. The opponents say, well, you're giving back $5 billion over a period of years to the oil industry. The oil industry is saying, well, production's going up everywhere in the country but here because we can't afford to do business here. And it's going to be, it is basically a clash, I think, of political philosophies. They just don't. There are those who like government and the idea of supporting government and those who don't. And I think it's just going to come down to a clash between those two
philosophies. Okay, and then it's probably going to play out in the primary election next time around in 2014 if the referendum advocates get the signatures. Dacia, Assembly Chair Ernie Hall's public testimony ordinance draws public testimony and public complaint. Why and how did the rules of public testimony become so controversial?
This goes back to March when an ordinance was put forth, AO37, and it actually ended up passing. And that was an ordinance that would limit unions and their power within the municipality, specifically the municipal unions. The deal is so many people showed up for the testimony on the public testimony and opposed it that they really would have looked pretty bad if they would have passed it. You know, people from the public said, what about people who work at night? What about people who have, you know, elderly people at home? What about people who have to care for children? They would be limited by this ordinance. And the reason they'd be limited is because they would have had to show up on the first night of public testimony under this ordinance and sign up.
The sign-up sheet.
A sign-up sheet, right. And they've used sign-up sheets before, but they never limited the signing of the sign-up sheet to that first night. And that's what they were doing in this ordinance. Even if the testimony was continued over several nights, you had to be there and sign up at first. And the reason this came about was during the testimony for AO37, they had over 1,000 people for several nights in a row in the assembly chambers and just lining up and lining up and lining up. And it went on for days, and it seemed like endless public testimony, and the assembly wasn't really able to get much else done. Some people said, well, it's their job to listen, you know, to form laws and listen to the people. And the assembly, of course, was saying, listen, we've got to go get on with things here. So, you know, it came down to, you know, enough people showing up to make a difference and stop that from going through.
So now it's going to be studied or sent off to be studied? Is that how this is going to work?
Well, it's unclear exactly what's going to happen. L.V. Gray Jackson, an assembly member, did suggest setting up a committee to discuss, you know, the future of something like this. The ACLU was in on the writing of this, so it was kind of surprising.
Meaning this being the Hall version?
The Hall version, yeah. Yes. But Ernie Hall says, hey, this is going to come up again next time we have a controversial ordinance. Whenever we have something controversial, unions, equal rights, gay rights, you're going to have tons of people, and we got to find a way to manage it because otherwise it gets kind of out of control. People from the public are saying, hey, it's democracy. Sometimes it gets messy.
Okay, there's an explanation right there. It is messy. We do know that. Speaking of messy, former Republican Senate candidate Joe Miller, Sean, must pay the Alaska Dispatch, your employer, $85,000 in court costs stemming from the Dispatch's public record suit. This goes back a couple of years now to the last election, or several even before that. And took a long time for the Dispatch to win this ruling, which also includes the Fairbanks North Star Borough. So a little bit more complicated than the way I explained it. Give us more.
Yeah, and thanks for the softball question on my first day back on Alaska Edition, Mike. But yeah, it is fairly complicated. And to be quite fair and honest, most of this happened before I joined the Dispatch. But the judge's ruling, Judge Stephanie Joannides, ruled on the 16th, I believe, that Joe Miller owed the Dispatch $85,000. That's more than the normal 20% that's given to the prevailing party in these things. And it all goes back to records requests from his time at the Fairbanks North Star Borough, where he served as an attorney.
And he was running for the U.S. Senate at that time, and in fact was the Republican nominee.
He was, and he beat Lisa Murkowski in the primary, and then of course Senator Murkowski went on to win in the general election as a write-in candidate. But back then, reporters were trying to get some leverage or some idea of his background, and so we had several had issued a FOIA request for employment records at the borough. The Fairbanks North Star Borough said at the time that they would not release those unless Mr. Miller had agreed to
them. If I might just briefly, as a working reporter, you were familiar with these things, whether you were involved with the Dispatch or not.
I was, and I was a working reporter at the time.
Right.
So, but what happened was Mr. Miller agreed to release some things and not others. And in looking at what was not released but was referred to, our reporter started digging a little more into several incidents where it was claimed he used computers of other people in the office to vote on his own online straw poll. You might recall at the time that he and former Governor Sarah Palin wanted to oust the then chair of the Republican, the Alaska Republican Party, Randy Rudrick. And so Mr. Miller had a straw poll. He wanted to vote on that, but it would log the cookies, if you will. It would log where you voted from. And so, you know, theoretically, he went on to other computers to vote. And that's something that is in the record that he did do. Well, the Alaska Dispatch eventually prevailed along with other news organizations. Mr. Miller isn't saying anything about what may happen next. He does have 30 days to appeal, but there is an opinion piece on his website he manages, which he publishes, Restoring Liberty, written by a man, I can't remember his first name, but last name of Lamb.
Thomas Lamb.
Thomas Lamb, that basically claims the judge was in cahoots with the Dispatch because she had rented some property to a Dispatch employee for 2 months. The employee in question, I believe, is not in the news department. But regardless of that, all this came out when the judge was assigned to the case and Miller's attorneys had a chance to ask her about that and decided not to bring it up as an issue. It was not an issue for them then. Maybe an issue now.
Do you have any sense? I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead. I was just going to. Yeah, please save me.
Okay. if you're about to say bottom line, we want to hear it.
All right. Well, bottom line, he's got 30 days to appeal, and that's his right. I don't think in the end game of this, it's going to hurt him financially. He's got $425,000 in an account, Citizens for Joe Miller, should he run. And I believe that if he does, in fact, end up having to pay the $85,000, he will have a lot of support in potentially paying for that. So.
And this would be out of what if essentially, if this took place, essentially out of campaign contributions. Isn't that what that $400,000 is?
The $400,000 are campaign. Now, I'm not saying he would use that, but I'm saying he's got that much money, so he has support, he has monetary support. If it should come out where he has to write the check, my feeling is that there are enough people out there that would support him that it wouldn't hurt him.
Oh, friends of Joe Miller or?
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt him. I think he might even come up net positive at the end of the day.
Citizens to Restore Liberty, something like that. Okay, Daisha, Alaska Pacific University cuts tuition. This is pretty surprising, probably maybe one of the few places in the country. Tell us
it
more.
It is. It bucks the trend. Everywhere around the country, college tuition has been going up and outpacing the income growth of average Americans. But here at Alaska Pacific University, they're cutting tuition by around 30%. Now, it's a pretty expensive tuition. It's a private liberal arts college. It was $29,600, and they're taking it down to $19,950. So, you know, it's still $20,000. But, you know, having looked at the prices for private liberal arts colleges and having attended some of them, that's pretty cheap. A lot of them are, you know, 40, $50,000 a year. So $20,000, not bad.
At random, it's a lot less than the University of Southern California.
That's right. And so, you know, another reason that they're doing this, and I talked with Don Bantz, the president of APU, at length about this, is, you know, they do have small class sizes. They have teacher-student ratios that are like 8, 9, 10 students to 1, which sounds great. And they want to keep classes fairly small, but it might not hurt them to bring up the class sizes a little bit. I mean, this could really boost enrollment. There are only like 600 and some students.
And you have
there.
To usually, at most places, you have to have a minimum number of students to keep the class going.
Yes, and I think that that's an underlying motivation here. And they want to also keep that type of education, a liberal arts education, open and available to Alaskans. I mean, you can go to UAA and it's a different type of education. Bigger class sizes, big sports teams, different priorities. Not to say that great education isn't going on over there, but at a private liberal arts college, you're focusing a little bit differently. It's bigger focus on academics, less on sports, and they want to bring in more Alaskans and keep them from going out of state, because this is a comparable number with some of the big state colleges that you see Alaskan students going down to Washington,
so
Oregon,
in a way,
California
if I'm
for.
In listening or hearing this correctly, APU's competition is not UAA, it's
not really.
People who would go to some Pacific Northwest or Midwest or California liberal arts college or small college.
Right.
Okay. Sean, the Nenana Ice Classic, the ice pool, has a winner at last.
It does.
This is the latest date in the history of the ice pool, almost 100 years now. Or is it?
Yeah, or is it, which that came out, of course, after I wrote an article claiming it was. It all depends on whether you use the Julian or Gregorian calendar. I'm not going to get into the here nor there of that. But a University of Alaska professor points out that in 1964, the previous record for ice out, which was May 20th, was a leap year. So there was an extra 24 hours of daylight to warm up the ice. And so it's not a record, according to him. But both the Ice Classic and the Weather Service go by the, I believe it's the Julian calendar, the one we use, and say that it is a record. But however you slice it, it is interesting. And it's the second year in a row we've had people win who've already won before. Warren and Yvonne Snow won this year.
And this is unusual that only one ticket would win.
Yes, that's another
thing.
In other
years, a number of people split the pot,
well,
but not this year.
The couple that won this year split the pot in 2005 with 45 other people, and I think they got about $6,100. After taxes this year, they're looking at $225,000. But, you know, one of the reasons they won were the only winners, and they didn't actually pick the date. Somebody could have beat them, picked the minute. They were a minute off. It's so late in the year, most people's guesses had already come and gone, including the guy who won the year before, that was his third win. You'd figure he would have known what
but
was
But there
going
are always
on.
Jokers who pick the 4th of July.
Oh, there's somebody that picks November, according to Sherry Fornes, the executive director of the organization. There's always somebody who picks November, Christmas. There are the outliers, but very few late in May.
And there were, every year at the with the ice pool, the Nenana Ice Classic, there are a number of buyers who consider themselves WAGs, and they put their friends' names or their political opponents on April 31st, which, of course, does not exist.
No.
And this was a cold winter in interior Alaska. I mean, it is representative of something factual, the ice pool, right?
It is. It was a cold year pretty much across the entire state. We've been setting records for ice out on almost all the rivers. If you look at just looking at some of the, trying to track the flooding, potential flooding along the Yukon, a lot of those villages, normally their average day to ice out is May 10th. And they're still frozen solid today. So I think that is a good indicator.
Even though the Yukon has started running into a couple villages, I believe, Fort Yukon and Circle.
Yeah, and I think it's worked its way down farther. But many of those villages, if you go on the Pacific River Forecast Center website and click on the village, it'll give you the average data ice out. And, it should have happened weeks ago.
Well, and a lot of, if this melts in a hurry, a lot of water could build up in a hurry.
Potentially, that's a concern too.
Paul, a formal investigation of what happened when the oil drilling rig Kulik grounded in the Kodiak area last December is in progress here in Anchorage. It's been going on for days and will continue for days. What are we learning that we didn't know before the investigation? Let's start with that question.
I think we're learning that they don't really know what happened. We had one tug when an official with Noble Drilling was removing which was the company moving Kulik, said, "Well, we should have had another tug." Well, yeah, okay, they're moving with one tug. The shackle that holds the main tow line on broke and disappeared. Nobody knows where it went. Nobody knows why it broke. There were some odd readings, I suppose, on a gauge showing pressure on that line, but nothing that would seem to exceed the pressure that would break it. They had slime in the fuel. I don't know what the slime was. That's why the engines shut down.
Sounds like a Frank Zappa song.
It's just like, it was like a combination of smaller things that added up to a big problem, and I think they're sorting through them now. They still don't know, for instance, what the slime was.
Isn't that kind of classic in major accidents that things by themselves wouldn't lead to a disaster?
Right.
And wasn't there some discussion of the weather, and why did you go out in that weather?
The weather was bad, but not as bad as they'd already been in. This vessel had been in worse weather than that and hadn't had a problem towed. The thing that it's going to mean, though, for the next drilling season and for them, I suppose, is that the federal regulators are really going to clamp down, and I guess other companies wanting to.
That from your perspective, is the primary major consequence?
I can't see how it could go any other way. And I think if you're planning on drilling in the Arctic, they can probably be angry with Shell, for whoever's coming next is going to have to pay the price for that.
And some months ago, we heard that Shell did not have another drilling rig to bring back this next season.
Right.
Is that still the current state of your understanding?
As far as I know, yeah. I don't know any different than that.
Okay. Sean, Alaskans face the prospect of yet another poor to grim king salmon fishing season.
Yep.
And probably some of those people want to get out there pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us?
Well, I can't tell you. People are trying. God love them. They're out there at Ship Creek in the mud already flogging the water. You know, the late winter, though, has probably delayed what king salmon are headed this way. But since 2010, there have been restrictions or closures issued throughout South Central, mainly on the Kenai Rivers and up north. Everybody agrees on one thing. Fewer and fewer king salmon are coming back to the rivers. No one can agree on why. It's just been really a kind of a free fall there on the Kenai, which at one time was, you know, pretty heavily used, but pretty well sustained, especially in the early run. Fishing Game says that they're going to keep a tight eye on the situation, and if the fish start flooding in, they can always make changes. But the list of regulations and closures on kings this year would take the whole rest of the program for me to delineate to you. But bottom line is, you're probably better off looking for something else this spring.
And maybe you could give us some clarification. The seasons are clearly going to be different in different parts of Alaska, correct?
Absolutely, and so the regulations are by region or sometimes even by water. Water source, like by stream. So some kings come early on the Kenai, some come early up here. There's later runs. Other kings have already started running on the Aleutians. People
since the majority of our viewers, I think I'm going to guess, are from South Central Alaska, if I want to go fishing for king salmon here pretty soon and I'm from Anchorage, what should I expect?
Saltwater.
Saltwater.
They're still catching feeder kings, trolling out there in the saltwater. They've had some luck off Deep Creek and out of Homer. Also out of Seward. So if you want to catch a king this year, your best bet is to try the salt water. And not to say kings won't be caught. They will on the Little Sioux and the Deshka and on the Kenai. I believe one or two have already been caught on the Kenai. But you're going to have to spend a lot of hours to see a king salmon this year.
Okay. Thank you very much. Paul, the Alaska Police Standards Council reviewed the conduct of officers who committed unprofessional or in some cases illegal activities. A number of officers lost their licenses this week and are looking for work. Kyle Hopkins of the Daily News, who's been on this program, detailed this in some measure in the paper. Tell us more.
Well, it's a 13-member council meets twice a year. This time around, they pulled the tickets on 13 different officers, police, state troopers, correction officers. Two others surrendered their certificates, which they need to be law enforcement officers in the state. The certificate basically certifies that they've passed the police standards and are able to work here. Without them, you're out of business here. And generally, if you go to another state, you're still going to have to come up with a ticket there, and this will play into your background there. These are for things like bribery, or a trooper lost his certificate for a DUI. It's the kind of thing that police officers are generally accused of something. This is investigated, and this council has a responsibility to clean up the ranks.
You've covered courts. You've covered police activities. You've been a working reporter who covers the police. Viewers and the public, one of the things they are curious about and they're interested in is how common is police misbehavior? I don't know that there's studies that show you per thousand of police officers, but I don't know, should we think that this is a lot of misbehavior? It's a minimal amount? How do we interpret that?
There's 13 involved here. There are thousands of them in the state. So it's a minor percentage, I think, in any department you're going to have trouble with. You're going to have a certain number, a certain percentage, that are bad eggs. Like you'll find bad accountants and bad doctors and bad anything, bad reporters. But these guys, I think you'll find fewer of them as a percentage in the police ranks than you would in any other profession. These guys do this to do good.
They're isn't the training?
It's training.
Unlike some other, not to speak about other professions, but it's very well laid out for you what you can and cannot do and should not
do. It's very regimented, and it's very much monitored. So if a police officer starts to go bad, another police officer knows it. I mean, almost immediately, usually. So.
And we just had the example of a police officer in Anchorage who was looking up a woman's address and other information on his computer. Yeah,
that's
okay.
Right.
Dacia, Anchorage won't have summer school this year. What's the explanation, and what are the consequences for students?
Well, this stems from cuts that were actually made last year. They did continue summer school last summer, but this is the first summer where there will be no summer school. Now, there are a few options. If you're in high school, you can do, basically, it's called extended year. It's a way to make up final projects or tests, for kids to keep them on target to graduation. And then there's something called ASD iSchool, which is, it's 1,000 spots for online courses to take a unique online course. Say if you want to get, your history classes out of the way so you can do something like theater, you want to do more. So those are the options. There used to be a full summer school for high school students, and summer school is completely eliminated for middle school students and grade school students, which according to administrators and teachers in the grade schools in particular is very needed. As you know, we have like around 100 different languages spoken in the Anchorage School District.
Right.
A lot of these are at the grade school level. And these kids historically have used summer school to improve their English. And what a lot of the teachers and administrators are afraid of is that they're going to go away for the summer and be speaking their home language, Hmong or Tagalog or whatever it is, Spanish at home, and basically forget. I mean, kids forget over the summer if they don't practice anyway. Just think if you went home and all you spoke was another language besides English.
And this is essentially a cost-cutting measure?
It is. I believe it was close to $3 million that they cut for this program, $2.8 million. And teachers and administrators, especially at the grade school level, are saying, in the big scheme of things, this is a smaller cut that could really hurt students at that level. Because when they lose that in the summer, and then they come back and they have spent all that time catching up, it compounds things. And they're already challenged with trying to get the graduation rate up. And if they don't do it in those primary years, once you get into middle school and high school, it's a lot harder.
Thank you, Dish.
And it's a program that's been highly utilized. I believe it's had a waiting list almost every year, at least for the last 5 years. So it wasn't like it was a program that had a lot of open seats, let's just say. So
now, basically, parents are left with churches, community centers, boys and girls clubs, getting their kids involved in those sorts of activities so that they can continue learning English.
Thank you. Paul, Governor Parnell promotes state funding of ANWR, makes an announcement in Washington. A proposal with legs or showbiz?
I don't know what it's got for legs, that's for sure. The Department of Interior is putting together a long-range conservation plan for the area 1002 and ANWR. The area that's not wilderness designation that was set aside for oil exploration. The governor says, hey, listen, we're going to ask the legislature to cough up $50 million for 3D seismic exploration on the 1002 area. And gee, wouldn't it be great if the federal government got in here too? And he's offered this as part of this conservation plan. He wants that included.
And wasn't this beamed into the National Chamber of Commerce?
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. He released it. Dan Sullivan, the Commissioner of Natural Resources, released it at the same time. So he's trying to get the federal government into getting this into this conservation plan. And the reaction has not been, as I think I put in an editorial, like Jane Fonda at a VFW meeting. I don't think anybody's really interested. So
now I wonder where you got that metaphor. I had wondered if a good part of Washington, D.C. as an audience would just look at this and say, well, he's running for re-election. That's probably unfair, or I don't know if it's fair or unfair, but that's what I think.
I think in reality, having an assessment of what's there would be a good thing to have in a conservation plan. If there's nothing there, there's nothing there. But if there is, we need to note that.
And I think what's there is, among other things, that a lot of politicians say, we've already talked about this, it's already been decided, and
that's right.
I got a whole bunch of other stuff that I got to worry about.
That's what they're saying.
What we have to worry about is we are out of time right here on Alaska Edition. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.